Surgical Center against Corrections Corporation of America. Mr. Gadsden.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Gregory Gadsden, and I represent Midwest, the appellant in this case. Essentially, we view this as a case of, on the part of the defendant appellees, of gaming the system. This is not a very complicated case, but there can be some confusion about the facts. Just very briefly here, the two parties in this lawsuit were engaged in a contract. CCA provides services nationwide in jails and prisons, and they subcontracted with Midwest to provide mental health services at a particular jail in Marion County, which is in Indiana. The contract required Midwest to provide on-site a person who is a mental health clinician with a master's degree. This contract was negotiated, and it was also terminable at will. Either party could terminate it, good, bad, or indifferent. The problem arose when CCA terminated the contract. That's not the issue. But they then told an assistant to the Marion County Sheriff's Office that they were terminating it because Midwest was using an unlicensed psychologist, or might have been using one, and further that they were considering contacting the State Attorney General's office for possible violation of law. They never contacted the State Attorney General's office. So as a result, down the road, Midwest sued for defamation. Now, what happened during summary judgment was, and that's why we say we believe it's gaming the system, we believe uncontested that CCA knew that the contract required not a psychologist at all, but a master's level clinician. So when they made the statement, it was an objectively false statement. They knew or should have known that what they were saying was false. One of their arguments during the summary judgment was that it was literally true that the person on site wasn't a psychologist, and truth is a defense to defamation. Never mind that it placed the plaintiff in a false light and also accused them of possibly violating the law. The other arguments that they made, they successfully made an argument that they were entitled to qualified immunity, and as such, they were entitled to make those statements to the Sheriff's Department. And they argued, we don't find any case law exactly on point. We just find general case law about when you're entitled to qualified immunity. But essentially, they argue that it was an important public function to notify the jail as to why they were terminating a contract with a subcontractor. And the other argument that they made was that the qualified privilege wasn't abused, which they have to overcome as well, because they had a peer review, and their peer review was nothing more than an internal review with their own employees. It was a form of misrepresentation to the court that it was in fact some sort of review of neutral and detached observers, and as a result, they were not liable under those doctrines. So we think the narrow question here is, so a person who makes an objectively false statement, and they know or should have known was false, can that person be saved by the doctrines of qualified immunity or other such doctrines? And it isn't clear under Indiana law which way this will go, but we think that the equities say that it shouldn't be the case, that this is a form of gaming of the system. They simply say, submit an affidavit during summary judgment saying, well, we didn't act malicious, and their argument is, well, the plaintiff hasn't submitted any evidence to show that we weren't malicious. But we did submit the contract, and the contract on its face says what is required. They knew what the requirements were. And so when they made those statements, they knew or should have known that they were false. And our position then, Your Honors, is they should not be saved by the qualified immunity doctrine. We think it's a form of gaming of the system, and we think the referees need to step up and call them out on that. That's why we're here on this appeal. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, unless there are questions. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mr. Hahn.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Midwest's argument that CCA must have known that the alleged statements at issue were false because the contract calls for use of a master's level clinician rather than a licensed psychologist ignores the undisputed evidence that was presented to the district court in this case. It's undisputed in the record before the district court, as well as here, that the qualified privilege of common interest applies. That establishment of the application of the qualified privilege shifted the burden to Midwest to come forth with evidence that the privilege had been abused. Midwest contends on appeal that CCA lacked grounds for believing that the statement regarding the unlicensed psychologist was true. However, a review of the undisputed evidence that was presented to the district court shows that it's undisputed that the peer review audit of Midwest performance was conducted. It's undisputed that the peer review audit found that the master's level clinician was performing services that he was not licensed to provide without oversight from a licensed psychologist. It's undisputed that the peer review found that Midwest was failing to provide such oversight, and it's undisputed that that information is what was reported to CCA's contract monitor. The contract does permit the use of a master's level clinician. It does not permit a clinician to perform services that he was not licensed to provide.
What's important for the question of the applicability of the privilege is what the contract between CCA and the Sheriff's Department required. And as I understand it, it required CCA to report to the Sheriff's Department when any contract or subcontract with a clinical provider was being terminated and why?
The relationship between CCA and the contract monitor, yes. CCA was required to report that it was terminating, in this case, the contract with Midwest Psychological, as well as the reasons that those were being terminated.
Right. So if it's under a legal duty to do that, then the statements made in the course of that reporting fall within the privilege, and it doesn't matter whether they knew or should have known that they were false. The privilege applies. That's the whole point of a privilege. Unless there's some evidence that it was abused in the way recognized by the Indiana Supreme Court for abuse of the privilege to pierce it, then that's the end of the case.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that was the finding that the district court reached. The only argument that's been offered by Midwest on appeal is that the privilege was abused because the contract talks in terms of a mental health clinician rather than an unlicensed psychologist, and accordingly, CCA must have known that the statement it was making was false and therefore could not have believed that the statement was false. As I said, that's not a correct recitation of the undisputed facts that are in the record and the information that was provided to the contract monitor. So Your Honor is correct that the privilege does apply. It's undisputed. The facts established are undisputed that the privilege applies, and there has been no evidence that the privilege was abused. As you correctly point out, Your Honor, the issue is not the factual accuracy of the statements. It's whether or not CCA had a basis to believe that those statements were in fact correct, and in this case that they did. They had a peer review that was conducted. So again, Midwest was required to offer evidence that CCA had no grounds for believing the statements were true. Midwest failed to present that evidence to the district court, and accordingly, based on that undisputed evidence, the district court properly held that the qualified privilege of common interest applied and summary judgment was appropriate. We'd ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling on that basis. CCA also argued below that Midwest claims fail as a matter of law because there's no clear and convincing evidence of actual malice, and the statements at issue were in fact true. These can obviously serve as alternative grounds for affirmance of the district court's ruling on summary judgment. The court has no questions on those arguments that stand on the arguments we presented in the brief. I would point out this one point that was raised in Midwest's opening argument, that it's a bit of a shifting of what the test is. Midwest had argued that the qualified immunity defense be applied, or CCA was applying it in this case because of an important public factor, was the argument that he had offered. That's not correct. The test is, did CCA have a duty to inform this, provide this information to its contract monitor, and did the contract monitor have a corresponding duty to receive that information? And the answer to both of those questions is yes, and the undisputed facts establish that both of those questions, the answer to both of those questions are yes. If the court has no further questions, I would conclude my argument.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Gadsden?
Yes.
Well, I think, Your Honors, this is a very interesting construction of the qualified immunity doctrine. What the defendant appellees are essentially saying is, we can say anything we want. Doesn't matter whether it's true, doesn't matter whether we know it's true. All we need to do is establish qualified immunity, and then it doesn't matter what we say. We're saying that objectively, they knew when they made those statements that those statements were not correct. They knew that it did not require a psychologist to perform. So they can try to clean this up any way that they desire, which is what they're trying to do. So they're simply going back and saying, well, we had a qualified immunity to make those statements, but the duty to inform doesn't mean the duty to slander and defame along the way. You still have the duty to tell the truth when you present that information. The contract did not require CCA to report these abuses that they're alleging to the sheriff's office. So that is a bit of a misstatement. The duty is one that they argue that they had during summary judgment. So it is still our position that this is probably somewhat of a novel case for the state of Indiana. And what we're trying to get the court to understand is, when you make a false statement that you know is false, and that's what we argue, because they negotiated this contract. They knew what the terms were. When they said that it required something that it didn't require, that is a matter that we think the ultimate trier of facts should be able to take under consideration as to whether it was a defamatory communication. And they can't go back and try to clean up the defamation by saying, well, we have a qualified immunity, so therefore we can say what we want with unfettered discretion. And that includes uttering falsities. And that's what they're doing here. So, again, this is not a very complicated case. There are no federal issues here. It is simply the federal court sitting as a state court. But we do not believe that the district court followed the rule that they must resolve issues of fact in favor of the non-movement party. They simply accepted that there was a qualified privilege. There is no case with providing subcontract with a subcontract between one who is providing services for jail that the court could rely upon. They simply relied upon the general principles. And this peer review that Mr. Hahn mentions is not an objective peer review. That's why we say it's a form of gaming the system. It was not comprised of neutral parties who didn't have an interest in the matter. So they presented all of this evidence to give the appearance that they were being reasonable and that they were being truthful. And they have never addressed the fact that they made a false statement. They simply try to sweep it under the rug. And if this is what summary judgment has come to, then this is the kind of argument that will be spread among defense counsels. They're ready to put it in all their briefs, and it will continue to happen here. We ask that this court recognize that this is not what the Indiana State Supreme Court intended and that this is nothing more than gaming of the system.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.